everybody. Welcome to the bodybuilding.com podcast. Nick Colius here. I'm some kind of editor at the website. I don't remember what kind of editor I am. But we all know what kind of editor my co-host Chrissy Kendall is. It's the science editor, because that's the word she chants when she whips me in the office for not using proper footnotes. Are there any studies on whipping people and motivation in an office setting, you think?
No, but that sounds like a great research project. Get IRB approval for that.
Or at least WBFF approval.
Yeah, same thing.
Because you can grant that, right? Sean Stafford, our guest today, he is speaking for the WBFF.
Yeah, I can grant you the WBFF approval.
But we have to use like a big feather to hit me or something.
Exactly, right? Wait, if there's wings involved.
I was going to say, can I wear wings?
Yeah.
Anyway, our guest today is a two-time WBFF world champion fitness model. Am I getting that right?
That's correct.
All right. Sean Stafford, optimum nutrition athlete. You may have met him over the weekend in Las Vegas if you were able to brave the lines. I heard the lines were rather insane.
It was crazy. The lines for the optimum booth are always just, I feel sorry for the people that get in them because it's 3 hours.
Yeah.
What do they get? They get to the front of the line.
They get a high five to start with. Uh-huh. And
a shot of amino energy.
Yeah, we load them up with as much as we can, whether it's a pre or amino energy.
Yeah.
Something to just calm their nerves, give them a bit more energy. Mm-hmm. We're actually trialing the new Opti bars this year. So it was immediately give them a handful of them. It was a bit like trick or treat.
Mm-hmm. So is there like a huge airplane full of bars that flies in? I think so.
I think they come in on pallets.
Really?
Yeah. You see the storeroom backstage, it's just full of product. Okay. It's crazy.
Hmm. Is that your major duty down in Las Vegas the last few days? You're just hanging out in the expo, or what were you
doing? It was a real combination of working the booth, meeting the consumers, filming some content for websites and that sort of stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, it's very hard to have a bad time in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. So everyone seems to be there for the same sort of reason, just to go have a good time. Mm-hmm. And when there's that many sort of like-minded sort of fitness enthusiasts in one place, chances are it's going to be a good weekend.
Sure. I mean, there is one way to have a bad time, though. Chris Ullery, one of our colleagues here, was telling me he ate boiled chicken breasts and broccoli on Friday night with somebody who was preparing for a photo shoot. That sounds like a pretty bad time.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
Were you able to eat down there?
He's not living.
In Vegas, go to the buffets. Something there.
Yeah, we had our 30th birthday party. Optimum Chisholm's 30 years old, so we had a huge party on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And it started off at the buffet at the Wynn.
Nice.
Which was good.
Wow, just taking over the buffet. I like it.
Hmm. Yeah, there was a whole, I think there's like 60 of us. I felt sorry for everyone else in there because it was like a plague of locust just came in and whoom, the food was gone.
So now, but that you're at that point, it's like, all right, you need to get in the front of the line. You've been watching all these other poor bastards
days
in the line. Like, let me go up front right away. well, we were going to talk about coming back from injury today as a general arc of this conversation. You did a cool piece for us earlier this year. It was a video that was a shoulder-friendly chest and back workout, I believe, which, it's funny, you never see the shoulder-friendly shoulder workout. It's always a shoulder-friendly chest workout.
I don't think there is a shoulder-friendly shoulder workout.
No, okay, no. There's just no friendliness involved.
No.
But we understand that you came back from fairly significant shoulder injury in the last year or so, right? Was that one of those, I don't remember the last time I wasn't in pain situations, or was it one of those, oh shit, I just really injured myself?
Well, it was one of those things where I think I had a bike crash in 2012. And it's one of those things where I tore my labrum pretty badly back in 2012, but I had so many things on and there was enough muscle mass around the shoulder that you can kind of just deal with it and get on with it. And, so many people that get hurt are not hurt bad enough that they stop. Mm-hmm. They kind of just muddle through and they forget actually what it feels like to be 100% fit. Mm-hmm. And then being 80% fit, kind of what feels like 100%. And then eventually it's 70% and then 60% until you get to a point where your body just goes, you know what, something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was a case of I just started to lose control in my left side. Mm-hmm. And I woke up when I was in Australia, I woke up one day and it was just sort of shooting pain into my shoulder to the point where I couldn't sleep. And I was just like, something's not right here. So I went to get a scan and that's when they found a sort of golf ball size cyst. Oof. In the labrum. And it was kind of depressing the nerve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So basically the nerve supplying all the innervation to my shoulder was just shut down.
Yeah.
So it's amazing what you can get on with.
Right.
you know, when you're actually that messed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the cyst developed somehow in response to the
injury? It was in the tear, yeah. So It kind of had been sitting there under the radar growing for about 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't. Everyone's like, did you not see it? Isn't it like a big lump? And I was like, no, I just thought it was gains. No, but it was
any kind of growth.
Yeah, any kind of
growth. Tape measure's going up.
Exactly, right? Just chalk it off. Progress.
I hear that from people all the time, though. Like, and say, oh, my shoulder mobility shit, you know, on this or that because of a car crash I was in 5 years ago. And they think that that's just like, you know, their path, their life went on a different path at that point. Yeah. There's no going back from it. Is that kind of what you thought? Like, yeah, this is part of my body now.
I kind of thought, yeah, I can, you know, I was still getting sort of either sports massage or physiotherapy or osteopathy sort of once a week, trying to just muddle through it. And it was only really to the point when it really had a significant impact on things I could do that I thought, hey, something's not quite right. That's here.
Surprising. Most people weren't saying, hey, dude, Sean, you got to get that thing looked at. Something ain't right here.
Well, this is it. So the therapists that I was seeing kind of say, yeah, it's very similar to like a rotator cuff tear or something like that, you know, which it's not much you can do.
Right.
And then one of them said, you know what, the symptoms kind of don't quite match up. I'd get a scan because I think it could be a cyst. And then lo and behold, they have a look in there and this
your
little
delt
thing
is too large and too
you could, to be. I'll tell you a secret. You couldn't see any cyst because it was deep in sort of the labrum. So you wouldn't know there was a cyst there. It was only
Hardcore anatomy chat.
Yeah. I'm like fascinated by this. What was the recovery like did you have the cyst removed?
I had 6-point surgery, so it was almost a full reconstruction. So when they went in there, they kind of said, look, we've got to remove the cyst.
Yeah.
We've then got to free up the nerve because it was depressed. We then got to sew up the labrum.
Yeah.
And if we're going to do all that, we might as well shave a bit of bone off, clean this out, clean that
while
out.
While you're
take
in
your
there.
It was literally, I think it was very much a case of, while we're in there, we'll just try and do everything we can to make it as sort of a successful procedure as possible, which left me pretty banged up.
Yeah. So, and I think for a lot of people, that's a reason why they don't get surgery and why they settle with 70% is going to be my new 100%. Like, I'm okay not ever feeling good because I don't want to have to go through 6 surgeries and the recovery. And I think mentally that's the toughest part, is accepting that. And then, after that, you're not going to be able to do anything. And then it's going to be a slow, long recovery coming back.
Yeah. And you know, the surgeons are pretty open with you there. They give you this is a 60% chance of working. So we're going to go in there. We're going to chop you up. We're going to try and fix you. But chances are there's a 60% chance this isn't going to work.
Yeah,
and I think when you look at those odds and you say that this is going to be not only 6 months on the sidelines, but, you know, it's almost 50-50 that you're not actually going to be any better at the end of it. I think that's what puts a lot of people off. And to be honest, if I was going to give advice to people, 70% against having surgery or 80% having surgery and you're not an athlete or, you know, you're a social sportsman or...
Yeah.
I would probably give surgery a bit of a miss if I could. I'd say I'd avoid it at all costs. You know, you can get physio, you can get osteo, you can get soft tissue work, and you can get by still feeling good and not go through the trauma of having...
Yeah,
it's hard, though, with athletes, you know, and even people who just kind of want to be athletic. There's kind of a badge of honor that starts to develop. I'm sure you saw this when you're doing all this rowing. Like, if somebody gets a tweak, they wear it as a badge of honor, and it's like, oh, this is just part of the game, you know?
Yeah. Like, how many ice packs can you wrap around yourself after a practice or something because of how banged up you are, but you will never stop. Like, I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit with Mark Bell, where powerlifters are just notorious for they got their laundry list
guys,
of complaints all the time.
Those guys push themselves to the limit. Sort of their thing is to, you know, a pound every time. You know, so they measure in such small margins, but it's just progress. They're just constantly pushing themselves, so... Yeah, when you push yourself to the brink like that, you're going to hurt yourself. Yeah.
Sure, but those people are battling against pounds on the stage. Like that's their sport, too. If somebody whose sport is more physique-based, like, you can think, like, okay, maybe I can work around this. You know?
Exactly.
But at the same time, are you committing yourself to being one of those people who just does, you know, 45 minutes of prep for 10 minutes of work in the gym for the rest of your life at that point? So, it's interesting you talk about the recovery. I want to know what to... Yeah, kind of when you... the procedure's done, you're deep into recovery, deep into rehab, and you're starting to think, like, okay, when did you sort of discover what your new normal was going to be?
I would say it's only really been the last 6 months.
Really?
Yeah, wow. So I'd say it probably took about 5 months before I could train properly or feel comfortable to train. And if I'm honest, I don't feel 100% comfortable and confident doing certain movements even now. So if you ask me to do some snatches, I would say, nah, I'll be okay.
Okay, well, we were going to.
Yeah.
Well, there goes the second
half. That sort of
half.
Podcast.
Yeah.
It's man against reason.
Yeah. but, you know, fairly controlled. And certain exercises I can do no problem, and I'm probably as strong as I was before surgery. But now there's certain exercises which I know are just going to make it worse. And there's always going to be some level of imbalance and sort of structural deficiency in there. And yeah, I do my rehab, I do my stretching, I do my all that sort of stuff, but it's always going to be a little bit off. So there's some things which you just learn to avoid and, you know, plan your training around it.
Sure.
And go
ahead.
I was going to ask if you had someone that helped you map out or plan how to incorporate certain exercises back, because I know I'm guilty of this. I get an injury, and the minute I start to feel a little bit better, I'm like balls to the wall, like, let's do it. And then I just get injured again. And that's the story of my life. I don't know how to pull back.
Yeah.
And so I imagine prior to surgery, you're doing almost everything, you know, whether it felt comfortable or not, but you have that image in your head of, oh, I can do this, or I know how to do this. And then all of a sudden you have surgery, and it's a very slow process. And I'm sure there were some temptations to be like, let me just try it. Let me just see this. And so how did
you weren't just training calves for 6 months.
Yeah, I certainly wasn't.
Maybe you were.
No, I certainly wasn't.
How did you kind of
You've seen my calves, right?
No, they're not.
Yeah, volume calves. Yeah, they're running back to back.
I don't think I've trained them for 6 minutes, let alone 6 months.
So did you work, did you have a trainer or anyone kept you on track? And
Hired a coach. So I hired, I'm really lucky that I have a team of trainers that I work with at my gym in London. And we have a rehab specialist. He's got a master's in exercise science, and he's very good at rehab. So I just said to him, I need to hire you for 2 45-minute sessions a week. I paid the money, I blocked the time out, and it was just one of those things where that's kind of, anybody that has a trainer, one of the best things about it is it holds you accountable, and it means that you don't skip it, and you don't, you know, you don't just go and do legs, you don't just jump on a treadmill, you know, it forces you to be diligent and to tick off all the things you need to tick off. And not only that, but you've got another set of eyes watching you so that your form will be better, your technique will be better. You know, they'll, when you maybe go, ah, I'm going to stop, they'll say, actually, you could probably do a couple more reps there, or slow it down, engage the right muscles, sort of make sure everything's firing the right way. I think, you know, I think it cost me, what, $500, or the equivalent of about $500?
Nothing.
For the first 6 weeks, and it's just
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, if it's versus another surgery.
Exactly. Like thousands of dollars for,
And for me, the hardest thing about being sort of the rehab process was that I wasn't able to train 100%. And that's what I love doing. So for me, it was $500 spent, but it's going to get me there quicker. It's going to get me to where I need to be quicker. So I was happy to pay it.
So with all the work that they did on your shoulder, is that like a bionic shoulder now? Has this beautiful range of motion? The other one's the bad shoulder?
No, not quite. It's still, as I said, it's 60%. No, it's not 100%. But again, it's one of those things where I think for the rest of my life, I'll probably have to spend a bit more time warming it up, working on the sort of the rotator cuffs on my left-hand side are still weaker than my right-hand side. My pec on my left-hand side is still a lot tighter. So that's one of those things where I still get soft tissue. I still spend 15 minutes before every session warming it up. And I think that's just part of my life now. But
Has it changed like the priorities that you use when you, you know, construct your split or something? Like
100%.
Chest and back is not the pairing that everybody does by any means. I saw you had another video online that was shoulders and back. Do you have that in mind when you construct those?
I actually don't train shoulders. As in, I very, very rarely train shoulders in isolation. As in, a lot of guys, especially guys that compete in physique, you know, shoulders is a big day for them. For me, it's not, because I actually recruit shoulders nearly doing everything else. When I train back, I recruit shoulders. When I train chest, I recruit shoulders, arms, shoulders. So for me, I don't want to overwork them. As in, I try and base my splits around recovery patterns, and I know that my shoulders need a high level of recovery. So I actually combine a lot of the time, I call it a weak link program. So things that are not so good, so hamstrings, lower back, and the smaller muscles of the shoulder, sort of like the medial delts, the rear delts, those sort of things. I kind of chunk them together into like a 30, 40 minute program, and that's kind of what I do when I've got 35, 40 minutes spare.
Okay,
and
so
I might
like
not.
Almost an active recovery day, toss that
kind
in.
Of,
or
kind of.
That's a cool approach.
Yeah. It's whenever I've got a couple of days where I'm not smashing a really hard workout, I'll look to push on and kind of build up this weak link program so that eventually those weaker muscles will be just as good as the. Mm-hmm. The other ones, the power muscles.
And when somebody in the gym sees you doing that, do you stop and say, well, give them the functional exercise? Sure.
Well,
actually.
Well, you see here.
I mean, I don't know. It's like injuries can be kind of like pregnancies, I found. Like everybody's gone through a pregnancy, father and mother, you know, they've got the lesson to take.
They become
away,
an instant expert, right?
Instant expert. Yeah. Like, oh, I can tell you all about pregnancies and births and everything. And everybody who's had an injury, like they come back. They're at even if they're just at 60% again, they'll tell you everything you want to know about it. So
it's actually quite so I'd say probably if people get in touch with me on my Facebook page or on Twitter or on something, I'd say 30% of all the questions I get asked, apart from, hey bro, how'd you get abs? you know, I've hurt my shoulder, what can I do? And although I've been through the process, I know how complex the shoulder is and how everyone's circumstances are completely different. So I always have to say, look, go see a trained professional.
Go
see a doctor. Go see a physio. Go see an osteo. Get their advice, and then if you really want to, you know, if you really want to come back to me and let me know what they said.
Right.
You know, go on my YouTube. See, I vlogged the whole rehab process. Mm-hmm. I can steer you in the right direction. You know, some of the articles on bodybuilding.com, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's like people kind of think because you've had an injury that all of a sudden you're qualified to give advice on it. And you know, and I think as a sort of healthcare or you know fitness professional, you've got to be really careful about that.
Sure, yeah, and this wasn't like the standard bro impingement that you had.
No,
this was real deal. Like everybody who trains in the gym every once in a while, just because we have shitty posture and shitty jobs, they fight against some shoulder impingement sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But most people, they take that $500 maybe in their health savings account that I have $500 I'm thinking about right now. Like you could, there's so much you can probably do with that, as you say. Like, yeah, but before thinking about surgery, especially, I mean, back is the other thing. People hurt their backs.
Yeah.
And there have been, my wife works for a health information company. She was telling me that, it's 50-50 for improving your situation. Everybody's like, oh yeah, I'm going to get back surgery. It's going to be all better.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you better.
No.
I mean, it can, I suppose. But
yeah, again, but I think it's all relative to the injury, the status of the injury. But I'm interested, did any of your goals or have your goals changed like prior to you having surgery and someone said, where do you see yourself in five years as far as like training, competing, that sort of thing, professionally, obviously being in the fitness industry, to now where you kind of see yourself? And again, this is more of like a physique, like, you know, are you obviously probably not trying to set, you know, PRs and an overhead press anytime soon.
No.
But nope, not doing it. But, have you had to readjust any of those or kind of consider and be like, okay, let's take a step back and think what I want to prioritize right now and then how I'm going to get.
I think any guy, especially that's, it sort of goes to the gym, and especially guys that compete in physique or bodybuilding, you know, they just want to get as big and as jacked as possible, right? So they want to go in there, they want to be pushing huge numbers, they want to be getting as big as possible. And I know that just, I don't know whether I'm getting older or whether it's because I've had surgery or just because I think as you spend time in the gym, your interests do kind of evolve and shift. For me, it's a case of I still want to be strong, I still want to be lean, I still want to have good balance in my body. But for me, it's a case of I want to be pain-free and I want to feel functionally fit. You know, I've never done CrossFit, but I look at it and I go, wow, I'd love to be able to do that. And I just know that functionally I can't.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where I think there doesn't necessarily, I think how you gauge progress maybe evolves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So whereas or before strength, it was just kind of like, yeah, I want to wear an XL t-shirt and it'd be skin tight. I think now it's more of a case of, you know, I'd love to be able to do a handstand push-up or, you know, I'd love to be able to row 500 meters in, you know, a minute 15.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it's just the time you spend in the gym and how your goals sort of evolve.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, there's all sorts of interesting research also saying you don't need big numbers to have big muscles anyway, right? That's a constant back and forth that people struggle with.
Like we always
people chasing numbers in this office or in any gym. They often do it at the expense of their future in the gym.
I'm weak as piss and I'm pretty big.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, I mean, Nick and I always talk about, you know, 1RM testing.
Yeah.
And why, like, how important is it to know, like, one time? And Nick always brings up a good point. Like, doesn't it mean so much more if you can do something 3 or 5 times?
Yeah.
Like, lift a certain weight in good form multiple times. Isn't that, you know, couldn't that be used as strength? And then you're less likely to have some sort of injury from, you know, lifting a heavy load way, you know, more than what mm-hmm. you can handle.
Yeah.
So just looking at strength differently than 1RM mm-hmm. or, you know, lifting a car.
Or even testing your 1RM. We had an interesting piece come out a couple of days ago from a great coach named Mike Robertson, where he said, yeah, you're going to use your 1RM for reference here, but you can use a weight that you do for 5 times to calculate it. Don't use, you know, like,
yeah.
don't use your 10RM to calculate your 1RM, but use your 5RM to
yeah.
calculate it. And it works. It's
mm-hmm.
good. It's good enough for everyone. And mm-hmm. at the same time, they don't just totally max out their mm-hmm. nervous system, max out their muscles to the point where they're like, oh, I tested my 1RM. Now I got to go to bed for 2 weeks
yeah.
afterwards. You know?
I think that's what a lot of people underestimate, is that tax on the CNS, mm-hmm. the central nervous system, just gets battered.
Mm-hmm.
I did a mini phase of wave loading mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago. And I was so tired.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2 weeks in, I was just spent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, okay, step back.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I did a 20 rep deadlift program.
Yeah,
just ended last week. Ended because I had that same sensation.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, fuck this. I want 2 weeks. I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
Like, after four, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks, I was like, my body is kind of telling me all the time that you're still not really recovered from this.
Yeah.
3 times a week, 20 reps, 3 sets mm-hmm. of 20 in this deadlift. You know, it doesn't have to be a whole lot of weight. It just starts to chew you up after a little while, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. I think we've all probably experienced that. Coming out of bed in the morning, can't really move. And you're like, why?
The advantage of heaviness is you can feel like you're... you can do more with less, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, I got one heavy thing in here. I don't have to just pile on, you know, hours and hours of volume in order to feel like I actually achieved something
yeah.
in the gym.
But I think,
you know?
Too, like, I mean, that was all great. Like, I did that when I was younger. Not saying I'm old by any means, but yeah, when
She's
I'm
21.
When I'm like having to, you know, stand up from kneeling on the ground and I hear my knees pop and it's like,
yeah.
I'm like, mm-hmm. why am I doing this? So, like, what is the point? I will never compete in the Olympics. I mean, unless something crazy happens. But like,
at the Olympics.
Yeah.
Olympics comes calling at bodybuilding.com.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, there's a shortage.
Yeah, we need a badminton player. But yeah, you just, I, you know, as you were talking about it, it's like just considering what your goals are. What do you want to be doing 5 years from now, 6 years from mm-hmm. now? And I mean, even for myself being a collegiate athlete to now how I train is a complete 180. Like, I think back to how I did 3 hours of training a day,
yeah.
and I'm like dying after 1 hour now. I'm like, that's good. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what, you know, you just kind of step back and think, what am I trying to prove?
Mm-hmm.
And I love to have goals. I think goals are great. But having goals that you see yourself being able to continue and progress forward on mm-hmm. and build off on.
Having a kid around can help bring some of this into clarity
yeah.
as well, I imagine.
Puts a lot into perspective.
Yeah.
They're functional. Like,
yeah.
they're very functional. You want to hang out with them, keep up with them.
Yeah.
You can't just be just destroying yourself all the time.
Yeah, I with my boy, because his cot in the room, and because he's very small.
Mm-hmm.
Bending down and over to pick him up, and as he gets heavier and heavier
yeah.
and heavier, it's like my back is like, oh wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, my older son is 4 and a half, and he's officially like, you know, almost too heavy to carry. Now he's
yeah.
about 40 pounds, but it's like 40 seriously long, ungainly
yeah.
pounds.
Yeah.
Awkward.
And he wants to be carried every once in a while, just like, oh, I'm so sleepy, carry me there. I'm like, dude, you're a sandbag.
Yeah.
You know? I gotta put you over my shoulder.
Yeah,
but
yard run,
I mean,
with it.
I don't know. I feel like if I'm so gassed that I can't play with him and play with him to a degree where like we're both having a hell of a lot of fun, I'm missing out on a lot.
100, yeah.
too.
And
know?
I think that's where sort of your perspective changes. You know, you, what would you rather do? Be able to play for 45 minutes without even puffing
mm-hmm.
with your boy, or, you know, be jacked and wear a large t-shirt?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
puts things into priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kids, they seem like they don't have rotator cuffs. I think they
they don't, do they? Like,
no.
I remember when I was a kid, I was like, I was never ever injured.
Right.
They don't have tight hamstrings. Yeah, they don't. Or hip flexors. No shoulder issues.
Are there hips? Thinking, because I watch kids squat all the damn time.
Yeah.
Are their hips fundamentally different than ours? Do you know this? Like, is there something that happens between age 4 and age 30 where your hips just kind of go, nope?
Yeah, I know. It feels like
the squatting culture people, you look at people on a train platform in Japan or India, their squat isn't a little kid squat necessarily. It's a little different.
Yeah. No, it's crazy because none of that changes and what they relate to, even as we get older and increasing our risk for falls and fractures, it's a lot of it is not because yes, you have hormone changes, you have things like that, but a lot of it is because we just become more inactive, whether that's flexibility. Yeah. And as you get into your 60s, 70s, 80s, a lot of times we see people doing less weight bearing. So then their bones become weaker. Yes, you have issues and you see estrogen go down and that can affect, for women, bone formation. But a lot of it is because we just are more physically inactive. And I know when I was younger, because of the sports I played, I was always stretching and doing all that sort of stuff. I don't do it anymore. And that is like the number one reason I think why I'm in pain or like have tightness. It's just because I lift weights, I do all that, but I don't stretch anymore. Mm-hmm. I tell myself every Sunday night, like, I'm going to start this week stretching.
Hmm.
And it lasts for one day.
But it's hard. It's interesting hearing you talk about weak links because you can kind of take two paths there. You can be like, all right, yeah, you stretch what's tight, but then there's also I'm going to strengthen what's weak and try to add in some natural flexibility by working on weak links and
structural balance.
Exactly. You hear strength coaches all the time say, oh, you think you should be stretching your hamstrings. Your hamstrings aren't the problem. It's your weak hip flexors, blah, blah, blah. You know, how do you navigate that when your body is your business?
I think you've just got to try and be as informed as possible, haven't you? Mm-hmm. And your body isn't, you've had it for 30 plus years, so you kind of know what's weak and you kind of know what's tight. And take advice from experts. You know, if you've got a practitioner that you trust and that, they tell you to go and strengthen your glutes and stretch out your hips and all that sort of stuff, then take their advice. But you know what makes you feel better. You know that if you sit there and you put a golf ball in your piriformis and you put a band through your hip and all of a sudden you can move a lot freer and your squat goes deeper and everything works a bit better. Mm-hmm. So that empirical evidence is pretty sort of damning. Mm-hmm. I'd listen to that.
Yeah, but then you kind of have to do it over and over again.
That's my problem. Yeah. I was like, I have to do this every day.
Every time.
This is the thing. I'd say most people, they think of a workout as being, I'm in the gym for an hour and 15 minutes. I'm like, you're in for an hour and 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. First 15 minutes is this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that. Then you've still got 45 minutes of hard out, super intense work. Then you've got 15 minutes to stretch and cool down. So it's just a case of you don't have to be balls out 100% for an hour and 15 minutes because chances are you won't be 100%.
Right.
That's too long to be at a max.
Yep.
So really, I always split it into those three phases of preparation, high intensity work, and then recovery. Mm-hmm. So
I noticed in the chest and back video that you did, there was this foam rolling and all these things. And then I kind of got skipped over in the actual video. They were like, all right, let's get to the workout, which I don't
fun stuff.
Yeah.
No, but nobody wants to watch you sit there.
It's not sexy.
Rolling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Foam rolling's not sexy.
Oh.
But at the same time, it does give you kind of an opportunity to get your mind in the right place for the intensity that maybe you can safely get into after that, I imagine.
And a lot of people, they always forget to take their pre. So they always, until they get in the gym, like, oh shit, I haven't taken my pre. So that gives it time to kick in.
Yeah.
That gives you time to, and also even that foam rolling and that stretching, it starts to get your endorphins flowing a little bit. It gets you more in the mood, Chances are there'll be other people training in the gym. You'll see some guys lifting heavy. You'll see some girls training hard. And it's like, you just start to get involved with the environment. You kind of soak up the intensity that's in the gym. And then when it's your turn, you just go for it.
Yeah. I just got to tell myself that. And actually do it.
Well, thanks for coming and talking with us. I don't know. I feel like there's a weak link training piece that needs to happen.
I think I'm doing it tomorrow.
Really?
There we go.
Yeah, I think I am. Because they asked me to do, I think they call it a quick video or something, or a quick training video.
Yeah.
And that just happens to be my what I do when I've got 35, 40 minutes.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that will come out before this podcast.
So we'll just time warp it.
Go back in time and check out the what looks approximately like a weekly training video from Sean Stafford.
I don't know what it's going to be called. It'll be called something cool, I'm sure.
Well, great. Thanks for coming and talking with us so frankly.
Thank you for having me.
At your shoulder. It's been a sensitive subject, I imagine, but you seem like you've embraced it comfortably.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's, you know, it's nice that there are a lot of people that go through it. Mm-hmm. And if you can just give someone, you know, a little glimpse at, you know what, it's going to suck for a while, but just do little things every day.
Mm-hmm. And life does exist after having surgery. And you know, like there's something to live
for.
Potentially for a while.
If you do it right.
So tell our listeners where else they can find you.
You can follow me on my Facebook page, which is Sean Stafford Fitness. Or on Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, which is just at Sean Stafford.
Mm-hmm. Fairly easy. But
I keep it simple. Remember. There's no underscores.
Yeah.
There are
other Seans with different spelling.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I'm English. Yeah. If you didn't notice in my expo raspy voice, S-H-A-U-N.
Okay.
S-T-A-F-F.
That's the Sean you're seeking.
Yeah, that's the one.
All right. Thanks for talking with us.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.